Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2, the safe space created for Black women by Black women to strip away the taboo of talking about mental health. You'll hear from mental health professionals and advocates, as well as Black women sharing their experiences as we break down the complexities, explore ways to heal, and support each other. My name is Ashley. I'm your host. Whether you're a seasoned regular or this is your first time tuning in, thank you so much for your support. Now let's get into today's episode. Everyone, this is Ashley, and welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2. I'm really happy to be recording with y'all again because I know we're only doing like every 2 weeks this summer, but I'm happy to be here. For those of y'all that are new, my name is Ashley. I'm your host, and yeah, welcome back for everybody that listens. Today is really special because we actually have somebody that also listens to the podcast. She is representing the Black women in STEM. She's funny. She's hilarious. So it's going to be a fun episode. we've got Taylor Howard Fortune. Taylor, well, I'm not going to call you Taylor because I don't want to sound like a teacher. She goes by Tay. So Tay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Yes, of course. I appreciate you. Tay is doing like all of the awesome things. So I'm gonna tell y'all a little bit about Tay, and then of course we're gonna jump into Fast and Curious and get to know her a little bit better. Oh, but okay. Tay is 26. Don't be nervous. Tay is 26 and she's from Queens, New York. Shout out to everybody from New York. But now you live in Maryland, I believe, right?
I do, yeah. Live in Maryland. Don't like it here, but so that's neither here or there.
Don't like it here? No, girl, I live in Tampa and I don't like it here, so I feel you.
I'm only here for financial purposes, you know, and then I'm going to go up on my merry way after I save up. Yeah.
I feel you on that.
I am leaving, honey.
Planning our exit right now.
Yes.
So she is a software. Yes. We're going to book the U-Haul, you know, organize the move. I hear you. So she is a software web engineer for the government. She's self-taught. That's amazing.
Yep.
She also teaches inner city high school Black kids in Baltimore how to code during the other free time that she has, which I don't know how you have any other free time outside of being a software web engineer. Yeah, so you're doing all neither. The things.
neither,
you're doing it though. Hey, and in addition to that, she's also building. Yes, we are here. She's also building a mobile app for J Baller Enterprise, which is a basketball recruiting company for high school students in California, with a few of her colleagues that she graduated with. She's also a member of Black Girls Code in the DMV area and recently joined Black Girls in Art Spaces. That's a worldwide community of Black girls that do art in the DMV. Yeah. Did I miss anything?
No.
Do you have any spare time outside of that? I feel like you don't. No.
Do I? No, not really. I mean, I just do what I love. You know, and I just be, well, I mean, I do other things as we will get into, but, you know, other than that, that's my passion. So I put a lot of time behind that, you know, that's what I've been doing for the past 4 years.
I love that.
So, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to get more into that. And, you know, we're going to connect it all back to mental health as we always do.
Yeah.
But before we do all that, we are going to jump into Fast and Curious. We got 3 minutes. I'm going to throw some questions at you.
Oh, God.
You give me like the quickest answer, or if you got a story behind it, you tell us a story. Especially if it's a funny story. I love a funny story. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Go ahead. Let's do it.
Don't be nervous.
Okay.
Man. If you could hang out with any cartoon character in the world, mm-hmm. on TV, what cartoon character would you hang out with for the day?
Oh, man, that's tough. As I grew up in the early 2000s, well, I was born in 97, so the early 2000s, like, Proud Family, Powerpuff Girls, all that was, like, my thing. Kim Possible, like, whew, man. But if I could, I'll do, like, one of the girls from Powerpuff Girls, because I was, like, really in love with them. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I love them. Yeah. They were so, like, different than a lot of different cartoons that we had seen. And this was, like, also the era of SpongeBob, you know, and the era of Ed, Edd, and Eddie and all these things. So I would just choose Powerpuff Girls. I'm actually excited. It's on Netflix, so I've been binging it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I used to love the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah. That was a time.
That was like a classic back in the day. I think I would.
Yeah.
That was a time.
Yeah. It was a time.
Okay. Let me not jump into Powerpuff Adult Swim rabbit hole, because I could. I loved Adult Swim when I was little. Yeah. Okay. If you could live in any country for a month, which country would you live in?
Oh, man. That's tough. I've only been out the country once, and I went to Italy when I was in high school. I would say Korean, like South Korea, because my grandma's from South Korea, my mom's mom. So I would go back to my roots, I guess somebody would say, just see the culture out there. So I would choose there. Yeah.
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 That would be really cool. Especially if you could go with your family.
Yeah, that'd be dope, really, right? Cool. Yeah, that'd be dope.
Mm-hmm. If you could be if you could be magically fluent in any language, what would it be?
Sign language. Yeah, sign language.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I say sign language because I don't know, I've always been the type of person to always think about people that are not in need, because we take everything for granted that are able-bodied people. Like, there's people in wheelchairs that has gotten, like, tragically shot or, you know, probably born with a condition that put them, you know, paralyzed and stuff like that, or can't talk, you know, people who are deaf and things like that. So I think sign language would be something. And I guess that would count as a language because it's different. So I would say sign language, just to have that universal type of language behind my back. And I think it's pretty cool, you know. I've tapped into it, you know, a little bit. I want to keep going with it, but it's really cool to just use your hands to talk, because, like, we use our hands to, like, express ourselves today. So imagine if you can't talk and you're just signing everything. That is just dope to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I love ASL. Yeah. I took ASL in college for one semester, whatever it was, like, the minimum that I had to hit. But I really liked it, and I would have loved to, like, continue pursuing it, because it's really cool. And, like, I started to realize even within, like, American Sign Language, there's, like, different dialects. Like, I was learning that even, like, Black people have their own, like, slang within American Sign Language, and then you go to another country and it's different. Yeah. So it's very cool and, like, very diverse in a way that is kind of unexpected.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, super that would be cool.
Okay, next question, next question. Would you rather be able to run 100 miles an hour or fly anywhere in the world? Physically just, like, fly.
Oh, man. I'm going to take the flying part. And I say that because running, I'll be tired. I'll be like, oh, God, I can't do this. So we're going to go with flying. That's more safe, I feel like, for me, you know, in my lungs.
Yeah.
So,
Above the chaos.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the world, you know, for what it is and what people are doing, not doing. Like, it'll be cool. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to go with.
I love that. I think I picked flying, too. What
If you could listen to, if you could show somebody, like, what's your favorite album, and what's an album that you think everybody should listen to at least once in their life?
Oh, man. Oh, Jesus. Okay. I have been listening to music all my life. So, like, in my head, I've always thought I was, like, a DJ. But that's a tough one because I love R&B a lot, especially early 90s and mid-90s and all that. Early 2000s was everything to me. I'm gonna do something different. I'm gonna go with Born to Do It by Craig David, which is his first album. I think that came out 2000.
Yeah.
Something like that. So I think that that's an album that everybody should listen to. He was like probably the, one of the first UK artists to like break in the R&B world, you know. And that album is so underrated. You know, a lot of people forget or have forgotten about that album or just don't know about that album or know about him. So that's what I would choose. Either that or we gonna go with Life Jennings, the first album of Life Jennings. I think that is like a monumental album too. Okay. And I could listen to that anytime, any day. But I mean, I could go down so many, you know. So, but yeah, that would be like two of mine for sure. Yeah,
those are two great choices. Definitely,
yeah.
I need to circle back to those. For sure. Okay, last question. So, if you could pick your favorite restaurant that you like to go to, or your favorite meal that you like to cook, you got an exclusive dinner. You can pick five people. Okay. They could be dead, alive, or fictional.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you inviting to the table?
Oh, man. Okay, so I love Alicia Keys, so I'm definitely say Alicia Keys. I've been a fan since I was a little girl, so I'm a diehard fan. So I'll say her. That's a hard question. Maya Angelou. I love Maya Angelou. Basquiat. He's one of the famous artists, like black artists. I would put him. Let's see. I'll put my grandfather. I felt like when I got close to my grandfather, he passed in 2020. So last 4 years of before his death is where I got more close to him. So I would want to have him there just to talk to him more. How many I got left? Two, three?
You got one left.
Oh, Jesus. God. Oh man. Okay, we gonna go with Michelle Obama. Yeah, we gonna go with Michelle Obama.
Okay, so many people. I love that. So many people invite her to the table. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
a great she's important.
Dinner right there.
She's important. Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
She's important. So,
That's a great dinner. That's a great table. Like, the conversation is going to be amazing. I'm going to need you to put podcast mics in front of everybody so you can, like, share it with the world.
Yeah, I mean, well, you got, what you got in there? You got musical, you got artist person there. You got a woman empowerment type of woman. And you got somebody that, you know, that was close to me. So, you know, it's a lot at one. So, and that makes up me. So I guess that would be cool, right? To have what I identify as, you know, at the table, you know? So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. That's my pick.
All right, Tay. Thank you so much for playing Fast and Curious. I love your table. I will be happy to, like, you know, bartend for the night for your guests.
Yeah,
I just want to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
So I've been excited to I mean, excited since we first spoke to bring you onto the pod for an episode for lots of different reasons. But one of the biggest things that stood out to me when we spoke is that you are in tech. You're in STEM. You're a software engineer. And I was really curious about, I'm always curious how Black women move through certain spaces and the effect of being in those spaces on our mental health. So first off, because some people might be like, software engineer, I don't know what that is. I've heard about it in movies. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what is a software engineer? What do you do and kind of how you got into it? Because I know you're also self-taught.
Yeah, so software engineer, it could be, it's different levels, it's different types too. But a general type of description is just like someone that has the ability to take a website or an app and make it alive. It's almost like a creator in a way. you know, you're kind of just taking the visual aspect and making it however you want or however the client wants. And that's kind of like how I would describe it. You know, you do it within different coding languages. There's various of coding languages out there. And, you know, there's different types of software engineers. Like I said, it's front end, which is more of the harder part code. And then the front end is more of the web design. That's where you have like the UI and UX, which is more the design part. So, you know, it's just how you want to look at it, but it's more so of making your vision on a computerized type of mindset come to life, I guess you could say. That's the best way I could put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really another way. I don't know. I see it as art, like digital art in a way.
Yeah.
Because you're building. Yeah. Yeah, and I know you said UI and UX, so you speak in software engineer language. I know user interface and user experience, right?
Yeah.
For those that may not know.
Right, right.
So, and that's just like...
That's what it is.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So how did you get into that? Did somebody like inspire you to explore that? Is that something that you had been wanting to do as far as coding?
Nah, nobody ever really told me about it. It was just something that just kind of fell into my world and I just went with it. I went to Hampton University, shout out to HU, graduated in 2020, spring, but fall 2019 is when I started to realize that I didn't want to go to medical school. So I majored in kinesiology, which is basically the study of the body. And a lot of people go to physical therapy school, nursing school, occupational therapy school, or they go to medical school to be a doctor. And I was like, okay, let me figure it out because this was my last year. I had did 5 years because I had changed my major, my second year of school from... What was it? It was actually computer science, and I changed it because I just didn't have a lot of support from, like, my family. And I just was like, well, I'm just going to do something that I know would be cool. And I've always liked studying different types of things that's in your body, like, health-wise. So I just was like, well, let me do that. Did that. So that brought me to 5 years, graduating within 5 years instead of four. But, yeah, 2019 happened, fall, and I was trying to think about my future. And, of course, this is the time where you have to apply to medical school. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. That's not something I want to do. So I didn't talk to nobody about it, including my friends, my family, cousins, nothing, because I am the only child. So I couldn't call, like, my brother or sister and be like, hey, yo, what you think mom and dad would say? You know, it was just more of like, Taylor, you got to figure it out and you better figure it out fast. So by me,
was that kind of lonely though? That kind of a lonely, like, do you kind of wish you had somebody to call and talk to about it?
It was, but I was also scared because, you know, let's be real. I have a black mother and a black father. But let's emphasize the black mother, right? My mom is not one of those moms that you could come to say, I don't know what to do. You can't really come to her and say that. She wants you to have a plan. And if you don't have a plan, you better figure it out so that way you can talk to her and have a conversation, right? So it was fear. It was a lot of loneliness. It was, I just didn't say anything. And I just was like, okay, I was doing computer science. I obviously like computers. And I think I've always been like kind of good with like fixing like different tech stuff like phones and computers and stuff. So I think it was just God just telling me like, hey, this is your passion, even though you ignored it. And I went for it. Random day. I don't remember the day, like the exact date, but random day, I just was in my room and I was like, let me see how to make a website. Went on YouTube, because you know, YouTube is the world of everything on how to know or find out how to do things. So I went there, and then about a week, I looked at videos. I mean, I'm still in school, still studying kinesiology, not having no interest anymore, but having to finish strong, you know. And I didn't have no idea of what this was going to lead me to. I just was like, okay, this seems cool. I'm going to do this. And that was it. I just kind of thought about it on my own, and I invested into myself. You know, I did certifications online. It cost money. Still didn't say anything to my parents. Didn't say anything to my mother. Didn't say anything to anybody. It was just more so me. And I kept it to myself to figure out what I wanted to do. Yeah.
That had to be nerve-wracking, because I know I had a similar path in college. Mm-hmm. I also studied kinesiology. I also had intention of going to med school, and I had been... My mom sent me, like, med school, like, pre-med camps in high school and stuff, so that was, like, what I'd wanted to do and told everybody that I was going to do pretty much my whole life up until my senior year of college. Like, I ended my junior year, and then I had been doing, like, a shadowing, like, basically, like, an internship with one of the sports team doctors. And I was like, this is not for me. Like, I don't want to do this. Same with you. Like, kinesiology is super interesting. But I was just like, I don't think this is for me. And I didn't really know where to go after that. But I knew I had to, like, you know, I had to say something. And I eventually, like, talked to my counselor and, you know, was like, okay, we can take me off of this pre-med path. So take all the extra chemistries and all that off of next year. You know, we can kind of like fix my path so I can just get my degree. But I know for me, when I went back to my mom, but especially my grandmother, who was like my dad was cool. He was like, yeah, that's fine. You know, just as long as you end with a degree, like, you know, you'll be, it's fine. It's okay. But for my mom and my grandmother, especially my grandma, like, my stomach was in knots when I told my grandma, like, look, I'm not going to go to medical school anymore. Like, I'm off that path now. It was nerve-wracking, but she ended up being super supportive, and she was like, if this is not something that you want to do, it's okay. But I know leading up to that phone call to both of them, I was just like, how am I going to tell them this when they, like, laid out a path? Right. So how was it for you when you finally, like, when they finally found out or when you finally decided to tell them?
Well... See, my story, my tech journey is very unique. So 2020 happened, January type of 2020. I got a job with Apple, and I was tech support. So my parents knew I was working for Apple, but they still did not know about me studying. So 6 months in, got into the software engineering team, and that was just by prayer. You know, and my manager just kind of like seeing something in me, never had a conversation with her about me studying anything. So I finished school, graduated, during the pandemic, so I had no graduation or anything like that. And it was tough for me to really have that conversation. But I went to school in Virginia, and my parents had moved to Maryland by then, so they were about 3 hours away. So I just said it in a phone call, and they didn't really say anything. It was more so silence. But when I talked to my grandma, my mom's mom is who I'm really close with, I talked to her, and she was, like, super supportive. But we're both Aries, so she understands me, I understand her, on why I do what I do or how I do it, you know. But my mom and my dad, not really. They just was like, okay, are you sure? And that was it. It wasn't like, oh my God, so happy for you. You found your path, your passion. Not really, you know. Yeah. But they're also not that kind of parents where they're like super excited with things like that. It's just, I think, you know, they come from the generation of, you know, they're in their early 50s now, and they come from the generation where you got to work hard, but you got to prove so much that you're in this. You know, me saying that, it was just like, okay, are you sure? Is this going to be a phase? Are you going to be in this? Are you just saying this for right now, and then you're going to change your mind come the year after, and then it's going to be something else? It was more so criticism, I guess somebody would say, more than like, oh my God, that is amazing, you know. And I'm just like,
more like questioning, you sure about actually what you want to do, like, have you thought about it? Okay. Yeah. Did you feel like, and I'm just curious, because I know, like, with parents being from a different generation, like, somebody the other day said it, and I can't remember who, but they were just like, you know, with every generation, the dreams and aspirations and also, like, the jobs available, they all change. Like, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, people would ask you what you want to be, and you could say, a doctor, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be, you know, I want to own a business. And now people are like, you know, I want to be a content creator, or I want to be a software engineer.
Right.
You know, these titles that feel, they didn't even exist back then. So I think sometimes there's some, that lack of familiarity with, like, this new world of, like, what you could do, how you could contribute in this world. Sometimes, you know, there's, like, a disconnect between, like, what are you doing? What are you doing with the computers? Like, can you make money off of this? Is this a career?
Yeah, it was more so that, because I come from a family that's not tech at all. My mom's a teacher, you know, and my mom has been a teacher all my life. And my dad, he's, you know, he works, but he's had different jobs, you know, different careers and fields throughout my life. So they did nothing with tech, you know, and it was just like, oh, I thought you wanted to go to medical school. What happened to that? And you just wasted 4 years or 5 years of studying this, and now it's something different. Now you're not going to use this. We wasted money. And I just was like, okay, what's really important? The money or me being happy?
Yeah.
That's the real question. That's the real question. Exactly. You know, do you want me to be unhappy and go to medical school and then get more loans and then be like, don't want to do this, but I'm here for you guys. Yay. Yeah. You know, and that's not something I subscribe to, you know, being an adult now. I just learned not to do that, you know. And I didn't, to be honest, if it wasn't for my friends or, like, my two cousins that are, like, sisters to me, then I don't know, or my grandmother, then I don't know, you know, who would have supported me, you know, during that time, because they didn't really, you know, it wasn't really a thing, you know. And even then, when we had a conversation, it wasn't a conversation after that. Like, hey, what were you going to apply to? Like, what do you have to do? And what are the, it may be months down, but not, like, right away. No. You know, once they understood, like, yo, she's really in this, you know, like, this is really her thing, then maybe, you know, they kind of started to support. But I also learned, like, you know, I gotta do what's best for me. I can't live for them, you know? And that's always been the pressure I've had. Yeah, that's always been the pressure I've had being the only child, you know? And also being a girl, you know? A girl is always set to do certain things in life from your parents. And it's just expectations that I think parents should not have on their kids. You know, because when it don't succeed that way, the parent is disappointed. And it's just like, well, you should have never had that expectation in the first place. That's that one. So why are we even here with the differences? Because you had expectations, which is not my fault. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. You know, it was interesting, but it was also very hard. I really, really had to, like, work hard for them to understand, like, this was everything to me. Yeah.
It took to them having,
right. And it took to them having to believe in me till last year. And last year was my third year doing this. Yeah.
So, oh my goodness. So 3 years go by.
Yeah.
So let's go back a little bit, back to, you know, you're working for Apple. Your manager is like, look, you know, I see something in you. Let's move you to this software engineer team. Let's get you going down this path, and you're like, yes, this is it. Like, this is what I love to do. And now you are officially, like, in tech. You are in, like, you're in a world in STEM when it comes to, I should have some stats, but I don't have any stats, but when it comes to women in tech in general, regardless of race, there's not many of us. And then you start to break down into, like, the smaller demographics of black women in tech.
Yeah,
that I know there's not very many of us there. So how has that been, especially being in a position where, you know, you've got a support system, but in a position where you're going into this world that, like, your parents don't necessarily understand what that entails. You don't necessarily have other people around you that may look like you that can connect. But how has that been being in tech as a black woman?
Man, it's been very hard, you know. There's not a lot of us, you know, like you said. It's not a lot of black women or women in tech in general. The stats are very low. I forgot the stats to the year that we're in, like to 2023. They're still very low. But they have increased over the years. But it's still not like a major, major difference, like 50% of a difference. It's just hard because, okay, I didn't study it in college. So, I mean, yeah, I have a degree, but I didn't study in college. I got certifications, you know, through online. That took time, you know. So I kind of did like online classes, I guess you can say. But, you know, I think when I have applied to so many different companies that I really wanted to be employed with, and I've had interviews with, went through the process, because the thing with software engineering, you don't have like a one type of interview. They're more so like two or three rounds, and you gotta like talk to the hiring manager. You might have to do a coding test, send it back to them, they review it, and then they might move forward with you or not. It's just a whole lot of logistics, and I think when they see a black woman, it's just like, can you really do this? Are you sure you understand what you're doing? You know? And I always tell people that are even not in tech, you know, I've told this to my friends, my family, like, I've always felt like, since I'm still 4 years in, it's not that long, but I've always had to prove myself 10 times harder to the person next to me, which could be a guy, you know, because it's such a male-driven type of industry. You know, it's hard. And I could have everything on my resume, all my certifications listed. I have a degree, no matter if it's not related to tech or whatever. I have it, you know, and it shouldn't be that way, but that's just the world we live in, you know. There is you know, racism that we deal with, you know, being a black woman in tech, you know. I feel like there's a lot of jobs that I could have gotten, but because of my skin, the color of my skin, I just didn't get it, you know, and that's just the reality of it, you know. It's no other way to put it, you know. So I mean, it's I feel like it would continue to be hard, you know, and now I'm in a senior level position, but that doesn't, you know, mean that after
congratulations,
I
depart, by the way.
Thank you. That doesn't mean after I depart from this role that it won't be hard for me later on the road, you know. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It just is hard. It's hard. That's all I can say. It's tough. It's tough. Gotta have tough skin.
Yeah, outside of having tough skin, when, you know, when work is done, like, how do you deal with that? And has it had an effect on your mental health? Who do you talk to? Like, what's your support system look like?
Well, for sure, it has been very hard on my mental health. It used to bring me down, especially, like, my second year, not really understanding, like, how the job market went in the tech. And then this is also pandemic, you know, a lot of things were just going on. So thank God, you know, I was able to find a therapist during the pandemic. And this last week, it made 3 years for me to have therapy and been with the same therapist for 3 years now. And, you know, it was very important that I got a Black woman, you know, and, you know, she has really helped me through a lot. But outside of therapy, I just use the tools that she gives me, but it's still hard, you know? Like, I would be like, is it me? Did I do something wrong? Is my skills not good enough? Like, do I have to study more? Do I have to take another course for a certification?
Yeah, it feels like you're never quite enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a battle. It's just a battle, internal battle. And, man, it's been very tough, very tough. You know, I've had my crying moments. I've had my times where depression has creeped up because of me not receiving certain things. And, like, maybe I'm in a contract type of role and it's ending, you know, and I don't have anything for my next step. You know, I've been through that, you know. So it's been very, very tough. Very tough. Like, it has its high and lows, just like anything else in life. You know, it has its high and lows. But I just think, you know, if you're in it and this is what you want to do, don't let nothing stop you, no matter the good and the bad. Let the good weigh out the bad. And I always live by a quote that says, success is not final, you know. And when you get there, you still apply yourself. You prove that you're supposed to be there, you know. You know, you got the job, they believed in you. Okay, keep it, you know. And if you really like the company, you prove that, like, hey, I can do this. You know, despite of the hardships, it might have took you to get there. You know, no matter if that's
100%
anxiety. Yeah, for sure. But definitely tough, man. 0 out of 10, don't recommend to nobody. To go through at all.
Yes, seriously. That's tough, especially, you know, going back to what you said, you know, like, you, 2020 happened, and that's when you went and found your therapist that you've been with for 3 years, so congratulations on that.
Yeah,
that's awesome. But
you
know, prior to that, had you ever been in therapy before? Had you had a therapist, and like, what kind of inspired you, but did you get to a certain point where you're like, I need additional help, and, like, who helped you find a therapist?
To be very transparent, when I was 13, well, going on 13, my parents had separated. And if anyone knows me, my parents have been together off and on for almost 31 years now. Went to college together, had me. And my dad just left, and I was in middle school. I came home one day and he was gone. So I went through a lot of transition through that time. And this is also a time where I was figuring out my sexuality, you know, and This is also another time where I started to experience depression and not understanding that it was a word for it, or anxiety, or just random sadness. I never knew, like, these things exist because I didn't have parents that sat me down to talk about a lot of those things. You know, my parents weren't in tune with me emotionally because I realized they weren't in tune with themselves emotionally. And it's taken them to just a couple last couple years for them to be in tune with themselves. And I mean wholeheartedly, you know, and I had a lot of resentment. So I was 13 and I was in therapy. My mom just threw me in therapy for like 2 months. And my therapist had moved out of New York. So I didn't have her anymore. And after that, I never saw a therapist. That was a very uncomfortable time for me because my dad just left. My dad didn't tell me that he had plans on leaving my mom at the time. You know, I emphasize I'm the only kid, you know. Mm-hmm. They didn't talk to me about what was going on in their relationship with one another. Mm-hmm. It was some sort of infidelity on both ends. And although they're not married and still not married to this day, they've always been together, you know, from me growing up as a child.
Sorry, when your dad left, did you have any contact with him once he like left the house?
It was such a wild time, but you know, to be very honest, I was in seventh grade and he came up to my school and was like, "Hey, I'm leaving." I just was like, okay, like he just needs some time. Okay, cool. I'm gonna see him next week. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
But when it was just said to me like, "Hey, I'm leaving, I'm going to North Carolina," I was just like, "You're going where? For why?" Like this is a kid that's oblivious to know like what's going on. You know?
Right. So you've been blindsided at that point.
Right. Right. So it was like maybe like the middle of the day, I was trying to eat my lunch and I was called to do something, you know, in the office. So I realized my dad was there. And when it was told to me, I just broke out in tears. I didn't know what to do. You know, I was very sad, you know, and it was very hard, very hard. And, you know, it took my grandma, my mom's mom, to tell me, like, they were having issues within their relationship. My mom and my dad never had a conversation with me or sat me down and said, "Hey, this is what's going on with us, and this is what it's going to be. Like, me and your mom are not going to be together anymore." And, you know, I found out through my aunt, my uncle, and my grandma. It was very hard, you know, and, you know, I think it was tough. So having a therapist, it meant something to me, but it didn't because I didn't know what it was. I was just like, I talked to her about what? I just was thrown in there. I just like, what do you mean? I just talked to this random lady. Like, what do you talk about? And I was still trying to process my emotions because, once again, they weren't communicating with me about what was going on. So I could barely understand myself on how to talk to the lady that was thrown in front of me. I just was like, "Ma'am, I'm sad. My dad left. I don't know what's going on." You know,
did you feel like that was what it was. That was helpful at all? Like once your mom took you to her, was it helpful at all? Because it's got to be.
Yeah.
Like it's got to be tough kind of being in that situation at, you know, seventh grade, you're what, like 11, yeah. 12.
Right. Right. Did it help? Nah, not really. Not really.
Yeah.
And it didn't, it doesn't take anything away from the lady that was the therapist at the time. It had nothing to do with her. I think for me, it didn't help because I didn't know how to articulate myself to even start anywhere, because I didn't know what to say. I just was told, like, "Hey, you talk to her every," I went every other Saturday, and I just was like, Okay,
what
that's
am I
it?
Supposed to say?
What, though I talked about school? Like, what do you want me to do here? You know, so it didn't really help in a way that it should have been. And I'm very young. Very young. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, of course, before social media was a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is pre-phones and all kinds of stuff like that. This is what, 2010, 2009? Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is before anything that we have today available to us, where we can call someone and hotline and stuff. And, you know, that probably existed, but that wasn't talked about. So, yeah. You know, it was just a rough time. It was a rough time, man. And yeah. It was probably one of the darkest times of my life so far, you know, because I just didn't get it. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I didn't want to understand it. I just was like, where's my dad? Where's my dad? Why is he not here? And that's just all I had to say. And I became very isolated. I didn't talk to my mom a lot. My mom was very depressed, you know. So my mom was struggling with herself, you know. And younger me was like, my mom used to talk to me every day. She's not really seeing anything. She would just go to work, make sure I eat. That was it. My mom would cry and stuff like that. And I just was so confused. I was like, what is going on? Why is nobody talking about what is really happening here? You know? And even if my grandma saying, like, hey, this is what's going on, I still was confused. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, girl, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, they're going to be together tomorrow. And tomorrow turned into 5 years, you know? So.
Wow. So he was gone for that period of time. And then you're dealing with, obviously, kind of the abandonment of your dad just leaving. But also now your mom is trying to deal with it mentally herself. Right. And also your whole life has been kind of shook because your daily routine is quite different now, and you're kind of kind of left on your own to figure it out.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't really talk to my dad during those times. It took till when I was like maybe 15, maybe almost 16, to really have a conversation with him. Mm-hmm. And I was still back at home in New York. You know, he was in North Carolina, and I didn't see him really at all. My dad didn't really know what was going on with me.
Wow.
It just, you know, it was a lot, you know. And like I said, he was battling with so much, you know. And now, like, older me has had that conversation with him. But younger me was just like, why are you not here? You don't care about me no more. You know, what I got going on, does it matter to you? Anything that I wanted, that you promised me, you're not going to be here for, you know, it just was so much, you know, like, oh, you let me down. You told me you promised you would never let me down, but you did. And I just, it was just all I could say was just like a bunch of like questions, because I was so disappointed and so hurt.
Now that you're a little bit older, like, and you know, like, basically had your heart broken when you were younger had all these questions around like, what's going on, what's gonna happen next, you know, like, so now that you're older, I know you said you had a conversation with your dad, how did that go, if you don't mind me asking? And like, did you feel any healing after that conversation, and did you have a similar conversation with your mom?
Wow. So, like I said, my parents are together for like about 5 years, and even that, they didn't even tell me that they got back together. My grandma told me. So,
really? So they were together when you were in college?
Yeah, they got back together my senior year, like almost my senior year of high school, I think. Yeah, so like 2014, something like that. Wow. Yeah, Yeah, it was just a weird dynamic that whole time. But I have talked to my dad about it, you know, maybe when I was like 21. And I had to understand to just listen instead of listening to attack. And that was very hard for me because I was so hurt. And this was underlying hurt for so many years. And at 21, I'm in college. This is past high school. I done graduated high school. I done, you know, went to Hampton and found friends at Hampton and started to find myself at Hampton and, you know, things that I like, you know. So grown Taylor was just like, I need to have this conversation with my dad. I need to make sure that he knows how I feel and how that made me feel. So, yeah, we had a conversation. It went okay, you know. It wasn't, like, all that. But it went because...
Yeah. Did you get any closure after that conversation?
Yes and no. Yes and no. It's like he answered questions that I've had curiosity about for so long, but he also didn't really give a lot of information on why he did what he did. And that's what kind of had me like outraged. I was like, what do you mean you don't know? You just woke up one day and just like, yeah, I'm out? Like I'm dipping? Like, is that what you did? Like, if that's what it was, then just say that. You know, speak that within your truth and part of your path. But I also had to understand my dad did not really have the tools of self to really communicate because he didn't have that environment growing up to learn how to communicate to self. So that's when I started to give him a little grace.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took a minute for me to just sit with it. With the conversation with him, and it took a minute to start the forgiving process. You know, it took a minute. It took a minute. Yeah, it took so much for me. Yeah, because here I am trying to understand why.
Yeah, of course. Like that's the biggest question. It sounds like that was the questions that you were asking when it was all happening. So. I don't want to breeze over the fact that you are also, you know, you're in high school and you're starting to explore your sexuality and find your, you know, find yourself, find your identity. So that self-exploration is also happening. And now your dad comes back into your life and, you know, how was that? Did you ever have a conversation about them as far as like, hey, mom and dad, like, Did you have like a coming out story? What did that look like for you, if you don't mind sharing that?
Oh man, my coming out story is not the greatest, but you know, I'll share. You know, oh, and to answer your last question, did I have that conversation with my mom about the healing process? Yeah, but it wasn't like super successful either. You know, it was just like, okay, I guess I understand where you're coming from. I guess you didn't have the tools, so it makes sense why you did what you did and how you did it. Okay, cool. So it was healing, but it wasn't in a way. It was just like, I take it for what it is, good, bad, or indifferent. So, yeah, both of them didn't really like, it wasn't 100% healing, but hey, it is what it is. What am I coming out story?
You tried.
I did. But my coming out story was very, very hard. 2018 is when I came out. I was home in New York. I was on summer vacation from college. And 2018 was like very, very hard of a year for me. Just personally. I went through a lot of down moments. I didn't do that well in my spring semester that year. I became very depressed, and I realized I was depressed because I wasn't living in my truth, And it was very hard for me to come to terms with that. Because I was very scared to tell anybody. It didn't matter who it was. And how I did it was, I was so scared that I didn't have a conversation, like a face-to-face conversation with my parents about it. And I was home in New York with my grandma. I didn't see them that summer. My mom had just moved to Maryland. My dad and her just moved in together. It was just like they were there, where they were here in Maryland. So I didn't see them at all that summer, besides them taking me back to school. But I wrote them a text. I did it through text. And when I look back at it, I have my reasonings on why I did that the way I did, but I don't think it was the most healthiest way, because they didn't really understand me. And I kind of knew that it was going to go downhill from there. Like, once I came out, I just kind of figured, like, they're not going to really appreciate this. But, hey, this is a very dark cloud over me, you know. And 2018, I also had just got out of my first relationship, my first girlfriend. So I was dealing with that, you know. I was just dealing with my first, like, heartbreak, I guess. And I told him, like, yo, I got something to say, you know. And I spent hours typing it in my notes app on my phone. And I don't even think the first night I sent it to them, I think it was like the night after that I sent it to them. And I was so nervous. I had told my grandma by this time. And my grandma was like, well, you need to tell them, you know, like, you need to say something. However you do it, that's on you. I'm not going to tell you how you should do it, but you need to let them know. And I just was like, okay, that's all I said. And, you know, my grandma is one of the most honest people in the world, you know, and very accepting. She's like kind of the only, like, first family member that really accepted me. And, I just told him, like, I was, you know, I was a lesbian. This is who I am, you know. I know this is me. This is not a phase. And I know that this is who I want to be. And this is my truth. And I cried writing it. I cried sending it. This is very hard. Very hard of a time. So when they found out and when they read it, my mom didn't talk to me for like maybe 3 months or so, 2 or 3 months. Like, for the rest of the, I probably did like the middle of the summer. Oh my goodness,
the whole summer.
Yeah, I probably did like maybe towards the middle of the summer, and she didn't talk to me.
Yeah,
for the rest of the summer.
Wow. So she never even replied to the email?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all.
She never replied to your text or anything? Oh, my goodness.
No. No. Not like, thanks for telling me that. I know that was hard for you to say. Nothing. My dad, interesting enough, he didn't say anything either. He just was like, well, maybe we can talk about it on the phone. And I just was like, well, I don't want to talk about it. I did the most hardest thing in my life. I'm trying to process it. I just did this. And this was also something that we have to keep in mind. My dad is Muslim. My dad has been Muslim since, I think, like, my second year of college. So within his religion, that doesn't really flow, you know. That's a very strict thing that they don't, you know, believe in. So that was another thing.
Yeah.
So it was hard. It was very hard.
You had that time where he he left, went to North Carolina, mm-hmm. and then yeah. him and your mom kind of started back their relationship again. Then yeah. you go to mm-hmm. Hampton, and while mm-hmm. you're at Hampton, now your dad is back in your life, you're in college, mm-hmm. your dad converts to being a Muslim, and then
yeah.
and then you come out. So it's just like a change after change after yeah. change. Do you yeah. feel like prior to your dad changing his faith or converting his faith, mm-hmm. do you think he would have been mm-hmm. more receptive?
That's a great question. I don't think so.
No.
My dad is very he has his own way of thinking, and that's fine. But I also feel like if it wasn't for his religion, it's more so like non-existent to him in his eyes, you know? And I don't think he would have had a different response whether he was Muslim or not.
Yeah.
He handled it as expected, not really saying much, not really being supportive. Yeah. But I already knew that coming into the situation. Just like I knew my mom wouldn't be super supportive with it.
Yeah. So you had low expectations coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. No matter if they were both Muslim, it didn't matter.
Right.
You know? I just felt like they weren't going to accept me. And, you know, my dad... He didn't really say anything even when we had the conversation. It was more so like, well, how long you been feeling this way? And I was like, well, since I was a teenager. But I didn't really know like how to explain it, because I was always told like you're supposed to be with a man, a woman is and a man supposed to just be together, and that's just how life is. So, you know, I didn't know anything about sexuality growing up. I didn't know anything about anything with mental health. My parents weren't them type of parents to have those conversations with me. So when I started to feel different within my sexuality, I was just like just fighting so hard and for so long, because I was programmed that this was not cool. So, you know, it didn't matter if he was Muslim or not. It was probably would have been the same, yeah. you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, you've still got your grandmother as, mm-hmm. I mean, thank God for grandmas, right? You've yeah, still got your sure. grandmother who's seems like she's a big part of your support system. You've got,
yeah.
you know, I'm assuming like new friends. So I know that yeah. within the LGBTQ plus community, choosing your chosen family is a big thing that gets talked about. Is that something yeah. that you, is that kind of like a direction that you've gone in, is like choosing mm-hmm. more people to add to your life that are accepting of you as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, of course, that's always been important. You know, I have two godmothers in my life. And like I said, I have two older cousins that I've been very close with since my college years, and they're older than me. They're like mm-hmm. in their 30s. So, you know, talking to them has always been helpful. And, you know, certain things they already had knew that was me. Even as a child, they were like, oh, Tay, we kind of already could see that you were, you know, having those characteristics that was showing that you were interested into women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they still support me. They support me to this day, my grandma. Both of my grandmas do. I'm not really close to my dad's mother, but she does support it. She does know. You know, thank God for my friends. You know, they have very much supported me in a lot of ways. My friends from Hampton, my friends from back at home, even, like, people that I've met over the years through like social media that are like close to me. So that's been very helpful. So yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to not even have your own family, like your own parents, to support you. It's always going to be very hard if you don't have that. But, you know, thank God I have the support that I have, you know. But, I mean, you're always going to, you know, look for the ones that is supposed to support you that don't support you. It's always going to hurt all the time until they start to support you. Yeah.
That's just, 100%. You know, I agree. And that's, like, that's super hard to even think about your parents not. And I think it's interesting because you obviously still have a relationship with your parents. So it's like it's like an odd dance that you're doing where, like, you know, I'm sure you probably share pieces of your life, but you can't kind of show up as, like, Tay as a whole, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No, I definitely can't. And I'm 26 now, you know, and I'm old enough to understand that this is not a phase, you know, this has been me, you know. And I never understood why would people come out, why is that the first question? Like, oh, is this a phase? Why does it have to be a phase for me to be sure about myself? What if this is my story and my journey and this is really part of me? You know, I never understand a lot of questions that are asked with, you know, from heterosexual people to homosexual people that are part of the community and identify who they identify as. And I guess it's just ignorance, you know, but if I also have parents that are not aware of things, a lot of things within that life is a bother to them, I guess you can say. And my mom is not religious at all. You know, she believes in God, but she's not one of the church-going people. Never been, and probably never will be. But she doesn't appreciate me being gay. That's not something that she likes to this day. I think she's more so embarrassed about.
Yeah.
Because it was an expectation that she set for me to have to be straight. So when Taylor came out, it was just like, what? No, this is a phase.
And that goes back. Really, like, that goes back to what you said earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, that goes back to what you said earlier about parents putting expectations on their children and being mad that their children have not fulfilled the expectations that the child did not sign up for.
I also want to mention, like, you know, not every person within the community has had trauma in their life for them to be that way or to result that way. Like, I've never been through any type of trauma. This has nothing to do with my father, you know, leaving or anything. This is just who I am. Right. You know, a lot of people think, oh, you had trauma in your life or you've been, you know, have had sexual assault instances in your life would result you to that way. A lot of people need to get out that, you know, that's not everybody's journey. And even if that was my case and my story, that doesn't mean that, you know, that doesn't equal to sexuality, you know, that has nothing to do with sexuality, actually. Yeah. It's a total different thing. Trauma and sexuality has nothing to do with anything.
So Tay, when it comes, do you feel like people use things like, hey, this is just a phase that you're going through, or like, was this because of this particular situation that happened to you? Do you think people use that to just invalidate that person's sexuality and their identity?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's also like, you know, someone, the opposite person that's saying those things, being selfish to the person that is talking to them about their sexuality. And even if they're coming out at that time, I think that is just a selfish thing to do, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, coming out is just, that's a thing within itself. That's an important thing, you know, especially if you are coming out to your family or your brother, your sister, whatever. It's a tough, tough thing. And it's one of the things that I feel like a lot of people within the heterosexual community don't get, especially if they don't want to understand, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot understand it, but if you choose not to understand it, that's a whole nother story too, you know? And I don't know what that's about. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if that's a generational thing, you know, because I've talked to a couple people within the community that's had the same experience as me, like, oh, my mom has asked me that when I came out. And it's just a very vulnerable time for someone in that moment, in that space, to just have that courage to come out and say it. You know, and that's why I think, you know, a lot of people struggle with, like, suicide and stuff like that, that are within the community, because they just feel so scared, and they already have pre thoughts in their head that they're not going to be accepted from who they want to be accepted by.
Yeah.
So they're just like, I'm just going to, you know, do what I have to do and leave Earth, which is a very sad thing. And
it is.
That's why I think it just ends up being what it be to this day. You know, social media plays a lot. You know, there's a lot of things that people say online that are not cool to say or nice to say. So I just think, you know, no matter who it come from, I mean, it's going to hurt. But it hits harder when it's, like, people close to you and your family, though. Yeah, for sure.
100%. Tay, I want to ask you, I know we've been talking about your coming out story when it comes to you coming out to your parents in particular. I want to talk about maybe, like, your pre-coming out story or maybe, like, your other coming out story when it comes to your grandmother who, you know, you mentioned is, like, super supportive, and your, you know, your friends, and I know you've got, I believe you said your cousins, like, I want you to talk a little bit about maybe some parts that, you know, what was that coming out to them like?
It wasn't so bad, I'll tell you that much. With my grandma, my grandma, when I told her, she already knew. The only thing with that was, she wanted me to come to her and tell her. She was waiting for me to say something. And it wasn't like, oh, I knew, get out my face. It was like, thanks for telling me. I'm glad you're comfortable to tell me. But I knew, and I just wanted to let you have that space and that journey to whenever you were ready to tell me. And it was more comforting than anything. You know, she hugged me after and was like, I've known since for a long time, since you were a teenager, but, you know, I didn't want to impose anything on you or, you know, grill you with questions and ask you, like, is this who you are? You know, and I really appreciated that. The same with my cousins, my two cousins. They have always known since I was young and when they were young. But they wanted to just tell me, like, hey, I wanted you to come to me. And I wanted you to speak on it from your point of view. Because your journey is not my journey. And I can't speak for you. Your life is not my life. You know, and, you know, they were the first people to really tell me, both of them, like, this is your life. You need to live for you. You know, don't care what nobody say. It could be whoever, your mother, your dad, it don't matter. Yeah. And these are cousins. One is from my dad's side and then one is from my mom's side. So they're not all, they don't know each other. They know about each other because, you know, me speaking, but you know, they're very close in age. One is 33 and one is about to be 30, you know, in a couple of weeks. So, you know, it was very refreshing. My friends, saying like, you know, I'm glad you were able to come to terms with that. And, you know, I love that you're doing what's best for you, and you're putting yourself first, and you're making sure that you're okay, you know, within this journey, and that this is who you are, you know. So for a lot of people, it wasn't shocking. Yeah. Like even my godmothers, they both were like, oh, I knew, but you know, I didn't want to say anything, you know, and I didn't want to pry you with so many questions and grill you, you know. So a lot of them said the same thing, but it wasn't, it was a little more supportive, you know. It was, a lot of them hugged me after, a lot of them graced me. It was like, what can I do to help, to support you during this journey? Do you need anything else from me? Yeah. Yeah, so it was less, yeah.
I'm glad you got, like, part of your coming out story. I mean, of course, coming out to your parents sounds like it was just disappointing for you, but it also sounds like you have this beautiful support system in your life that's, like, welcomed you with open arms. And it's like, Tay, we're here for you. It's okay. You know, what can I do to help? Which I think is, you know, is a beautiful thing to ask, you know, especially even if you're like, I don't really know much about, like, the community, but what can I do to help? And, you know, just from your perspective, if there is a parent that is listening right now and maybe their child has just come out to them, what would you have wanted your parents to say in that moment? And what advice would you give to a parent that maybe has a child that has decided to share their own story with them?
Reassure them with so much love, you know, make sure that they know that you're there for them and, you know, they're not alone. And they don't have to go through anything alone. And that's really it. That's all it takes. You know, a lot of times, you know, what anybody that's from our generation, we don't want your money. We just want your support and your time. You know, you can be a billionaire, you can have a billionaire parent, but who cares? You know, like, I want you to spend time with me, I want you to love me, I want you to reassure me that I'm beautiful, that you love me regardless of what I identify as or what I want to do with my life, as far as career, whatever, you know. Just have that reassurance, that reinforcement that, you know, they could come to you with anything, you know, and you are here for them.
Yeah.
You know,
and just 100%.
You know, ask them how they're feeling, you know, day in and day out, because I could feel happy today and then something could make me feel sad tomorrow. You get what I'm saying? Because we go through so much, you know, and it's just outside of sexuality, you know, just us in general as people, we go through so much and you just never know, you know. So just grace them with love and joy and happiness, you know, and don't shut them out. Because shutting out is just result to loneliness and them feeling alone. And they don't feel like they can be safe to talk to you. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. I think I second all of those things. I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, I know that We've talked about your support system with your family and your friends. I want to touch on something else that you had mentioned when we first spoke about, like, you know, I always talk about what's in your coping toolbox. Like, and you mentioned a particular type of art that you like to do within your healing. Can you tell us a little bit about that that tool in your coping toolbox?
Yeah, so, you know, being from Queens, growing up in Queens, New York, you know, so much culture there, so much art there. So, you know, I grew up in a very, very diverse city. And since I was six or seven, I've been drawing graffiti. And, man, without graffiti, I don't know where I would be. And that's, like, graffiti has saved my life from a lot of suicidal attempts and just everything. Anything you could think of, even stuff with my sexuality. When I was stressed in school, like, man, it has helped me through almost everything in my life. So I started drawing when I was seven. And I don't know. I just picked up a pen one day and just started writing on my drawing pad. And I've always been very, like, intuitive with my art because that's all I saw back at home was graffiti on every corner, you know, and on the trains, on everything. So, you know, I was like, oh, that looks cool. So I tried to do it one day, and I never looked back, you know. 7-year-old me was not the greatest, you know, at it, but I still did it, you know. And I used to really, really do it after school, like a lot when I was younger. And I just was consistent with it. You know, I didn't really, like, put a lot of pressure on myself with it. I just was like, oh, this is a really cool thing that I'm doing. And, you know, back then, once again, didn't have the words for a lot of these things, coping mechanisms, you know, and escape. That wasn't, you know, a lot of these simple words are very, like, new to me, you know, because it wasn't a thing when I was growing up, you know, and it wasn't talked about with me at all. So I'm just like, oh, okay, this is a hobby. So I just identified it as a hobby. I didn't even think about it till later on, like in my teenage years, that it was a coping mechanism. So, yeah, I mean, I've always done it, and I've always felt weird that I was into graffiti because it's also male-driven and stuff like that. Yeah. And you don't see a lot of girls talk about graffiti at all. You know, a lot of people be like, oh, black art. Black art is cool. No shade to the black, you know, artists out there. But as far as graffiti, it's not even a woman thing, you know.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, being a black woman, it wasn't even a thing. So I always felt weird to talk about it. So I wouldn't even talk about it to, like, my friends and stuff in school and stuff. People knew I liked it, but it wasn't like, hey, I'm telling y'all, like, I just drew this last night. You want to check it out? You know, and it kind of hurt me, too, because I wouldn't share my art because I just felt so weird about it. Because I was like, oh, I'm a girl. I'm into this. This is boyish, you know, that whole gender thing that we were always programmed to think, you know, this is for a boy and this is for a girl. And, you know, it took me a while to really be accepting of just, you know, that being a part of me and doing it, I guess. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that with us. I think that, yeah, you know, each time, like, we share different things that we like or are into, especially things that are helping us on our healing journey, it opens up the door for somebody else to either explore that or for somebody else to also share, you know, maybe maybe there's a little girl out there that draws graffiti and she's in college right now. Yeah. Listen to this. She hasn't told anybody. Yeah. And, you know, maybe this is like a, like, girl, you could share it. You can maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. At least don't be ashamed of it, especially if it's something that is helping you. I always say if it's not hurting anybody and it's helping you, then, like, stick with it, you know? Tay, I appreciate you coming on to the pod and sharing so much. Like, it means a lot. Sure. Number one, that you listen to the podcast, which is, like, I thank you so much for that, but also being able to then come on and, like, talk about your own journey, especially, like, being in tech, being a black woman that's also part of the LGBTQ plus community. I think that it's very courageous of you to come on and so bravely share and so openly share. So I appreciate you. I want to just tell everybody, like, where we can get in touch with you if there's somebody that's hiring for, you know, software engineer or somebody that needs help with their app. Like, where can they find you?
I just have Instagram. I do have TikTok, but I don't post anything on there. But you can follow me on Instagram at yourstrulytay _. So yours is spelled all correctly. And or you can email me, you know, could put it in the description below. And you guys can reach out for any advice.
She knows.
any advice, any stories. Always open to meeting new friends, new women of color, that are in the tech industry or that does art or just want to have a friend, you know, or someone to talk to. I know, you know, the world we live in is just very hard to find a lot of genuine people today. So, yeah, you could DM me, email me. It don't matter.
Hit her up. Yeah. I'll make sure all the information is in the description. Yeah. I did just want you, I know that you are doing some work. I mean, you're doing a lot of different work, but just tell us really quickly about the projects that you're working on now and like maybe the organizations that you're working with.
Yeah, so right now, currently designing a mobile app for J Baller Enterprises, which is basically a basketball recruiting company that one of my friends that I went to school with, it's his own business, and he's based out in California. So if you are looking for anybody to recruit you for like college or something like that, definitely hit me up and I could shoot you his information. He's always looking for people. He really recruits for HBCU students because there's no HBCUs out in the West Coast. Oh, nice. So, you know, he does that. So I've been doing that, been working on that for a couple months, and it's almost done. A lot of work. you know, work for the government here out in Maryland, doing the National Weather Services here, and doing the websites for them. So, you know, doing that. And then I do also, as you mentioned, work for a nonprofit called Code in the Schools, where we teach young kids that are minorities that don't have a lot of, they're kind of limited to resources within their community. So I work at a community center within that community in Baltimore City. And it's low-income students, a lot of kids, moms who are on, you know, government assistance and, you know, just kind of get them out the streets because Baltimore is a very, like, kind of place where it has high crime and a lot of gang activity and things like that. So do that and do that about 3 days out the week and... yeah, do art on the side. those are a couple of things that I do, and that is kind of all, I think.
That's awesome, Tay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'll make sure all of that information is in the description as well. Thank you again, Tay, so much for coming on.
For like, sure. This Thank has you been so a great conversation.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. And thank you to everybody that has listened to this episode. I hope that you took something, you know, really positive away from this conversation and, you know, Tay's vulnerability. I think that, you know, I appreciate your story and I hope that everybody listening enjoyed the episode. As y'all know, we are still doing bi-weekly episodes until the end of summer, and then we'll hop back into doing weekly episodes once, you know, life has been life and still for me. So as I kind of work through that and get to a point where we can pick it up again, that's the plan. But thank y'all for sticking around. Thank you for everybody that's listening all over the world. Like I mentioned, Tay is a listener on the podcast and reached out. So if you are also a listener and you're also a Black woman that wants to come on and share your own story about your own mental health journey, please hit me up. Slide into my DMs. Email me at blackgirlshaveanxiety2@gmail.com. Alternately, if you're a Black woman who is a mental health professional, hit me up, especially if you have a particular passion about an area in mental health.
I'm always looking for new guests, and I would love to chat with you. And make sure you're following us on Instagram, Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. Same thing on TikTok. And hope you have a great rest of your day. And I'll talk to y'all soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety Too. No matter where you are in the world, I really appreciate your support. See you again on the next episode, but until then, follow us on Instagram at Black Girls Have Anxiety Too and on Twitter at Anxious Black Girls. That's Anxious BLK Girls. And remember, just because you're struggling doesn't mean you have to struggle in silence. The more we talk about it, the more we heal.